You fight for your brother. You're not fighting for your teammate. You're fighting for your brother. And I think that was the strength of that team. No, I didn't want to leave Arsenal, but at one point it started to be a little bit toxic. It was hard. It was really, really hard. And when you have setback, you have to fight and wake up and then carry on going.
That is Kolo Touré, and this is High Performance, the show that unlocks the minds of some of the most fascinating people on the planet. I'm Jake Humphrey, and alongside our high performance expert, Damien Hughes, we learn from the stories, struggles, and successes of our guests, allowing us all to explore, be challenged, and to grow. And today we're joined by a legendary figure from English football, a man who until recently actually was a manager but lost his job at Wigan. And you know, sometimes, right, you interview someone and when they leave the room, you think, I hope something brilliant happens for you. And I really hope that this person makes it as a manager and tastes the success in the dugout that he had on the football field. Because Kolo Touré, from when he first joined Arsenal, and he shares some amazing stories in this conversation about Arsene Wenger. He was one of the Invincibles, of course. Then he left to join Manchester City, and he has some amazing stories about life at City. Then to Liverpool. What are his memories of the first time he pulled on that famous Liverpool jersey? And then he played for Celtic as well, and once again had a season as an Invincible. Kolo has so many great stories about life on a football field. We all know the things that he did in his career, but the stories behind those things are so interesting. So sit back and enjoy football legend Kolo Touré on High Performance. And before we get going, just a few key messages from our valued partners who allow us to offer you this conversation totally free.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Kolo, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
You've had an incredible career. You've done so many things, experienced so many things. Mm. So what do you believe high performance is?
For me, high performance is, I will take that in my concept in the industry that I'm working into, which is football. And I think that you can only talk about high performance when you work with people. You know, you need to have people with different skill set, with the best to achieve the goals that you set as a team.
Nice. So how do you go about getting people to buy into a certain way of operating and a certain way of thinking?
I think the first thing is you have to make sure you bring them close to you. And I think for me, relationship, creating an open communication environment is very, very important, because I want to create that trust between the players and me as a manager. And when I used to be a player as well, I always like to communicate a lot to my teammate, because when you create an environment where people feel happy, they feel like they have they can express themselves. You see like they can give the best, really.
So when you were a player then, Kolo, which environment allowed you to express yourself the best?
I would say Arsenal. you know. I was very lucky joining that that team. And in that time, of course, we had few like French players in the team, and the manager was French as well. But, you know, I was getting on very well with the English players as well. Martin Keogh, Ray Paolo, Sol Campbell. And these are guys that really helped me to get better, to improve myself and feel free, you know, to develop myself. And as we speak particularly about Martin Keown, he was huge for me because I was in competition with him, and I didn't see somebody that was going wanted to stop me. You know, I saw somebody who wanted to help me grow, and that have allowed me really to play my best football, to don't be shy and to express myself. Because as you know, it's quite difficult when you're coming from Africa, you know. I was not talking the language very, very well, you know. But I think the environment allowed me to progress.
Well, let's talk about the man who created that environment then.
Yeah.
Arsene Wenger. What was it like the first time you met him?
It was incredible for me, you know, because he was a friend of Jean Maguire, which was the guy that created that academy where I came from, Ivory Coast. And I met him when we went for a tournament in Holland, in Netherlands. And we played against a few teams. We played against Ajax. We played against Feyenoord. We played against QPR, I remember. And seeing him, you know, in life, for us, and especially for me, was like, it was incredible. Because I never thought, even in my dreams, you know, coming close to somebody like him. Because you only watch them in the TV, really, in that time, you know, could watch them on the TV and see them, like, managing the team. And when I came across him, it was, like, unbelievable, you know. You can't describe how happy I was.
Nice. And you had a trial, right, at Arsenal?
Yeah.
Why are you laughing?
Yeah, it was a funny try, I can say, you know. Very unusual try, I would say.
Why?
I was too enthusiastic. I say, you know, I wanted to sign for that club. I wanted to make sure that I can get a contract, you know. And I was thinking, you cannot miss that chance, you know, to not give your best inside for one of the best team in the world, you know. And the adrenaline was there, but at the same time, I was thinking, boy, you have to give everything you got to stay there, definitely.
So what happened?
Come on.
Yeah, I'm just in the game, you know, the manager explained the rule, but because I was not speaking the language very well, as you can guess, there is a moment where the ball goes out of the pitch, and Arsene Wenger just run to go get the ball. But in my head, the game is keeping going, and I just keep running, and at the same time he turned, I tackle him with the ball, you know.
Arsene Wenger.
Yes, Arsene Wenger, exactly. And that was funny. That was really funny moment. But for me, it wasn't funny, I would say, because I was scared.
Yeah.
I was scared.
Why were you scared?
Scared to maybe he was going to be angry with me for what I'd done.
Absolutely. Did you win the tackle?
Absolutely.
But he then offered you a job.
Yeah.
And do you think that moment actually told him something about you?
Yeah, I think so.
What?
I think so because I think he saw somebody who, a boy that coming from another continent, really, but was willing to give everything to stay and have a career in best country of football.
Greatest tackle you ever made?
Absolutely.
When we interviewed Phil Neville a few years ago, Carlo, yeah. he spoke to us about how many young players, when they make that step up and maybe train with the first team,
yeah.
they're often inhibited or shy, and he felt it was those that had the courage to impose themselves or show themselves were the ones that gave themselves a fighting chance of having a career. Mm. So when you were in the changing room before you went out for that trial game, what were the kind of conversations you were having with yourself?
Because I've been through a few tries, and I was in four clubs where it didn't work. And honestly, when I came to Arsenal, for me, I was thinking, what am I going to do there, really? you know, because I've been failing in four like small, you know, smaller club than Arsenal. I was thinking, okay, go there, give your best and see what happened. That was, I think, but again, when I reflect, I think those try that I did before helped me to be better in Arsenal. You know, it was almost like preparing myself for the peak moment.
Yeah.
You know, because I went to like Bastia, Strasbourg. I was in Bale I was in Anderlecht. And I think I played my best football in Arsenal. You know, and because I was much more free, you know, I was not putting a lot of pressure on myself because I like to be, I try to be perfect all the time, you know, and that was from the young age, you know, and that's what I was trying to do in the previous, you know, tries. But when I went to Arsenal, I said to myself, okay, stay relaxed, give your best, and then see what happened.
And it worked out well.
Absolutely.
Should we talk about what it's like to play in a team of invincibles? You've played in lots of different teams over lots of different seasons. Was there something special about that squad in that invincible season that you can put your finger on?
Again, I will say that we were not only football players. We were not a team. We were brothers because we used to be to gel together a lot outside football. You know, I remember Patrick used to make party to his house, inviting everybody. His wife would cook some meal from Africa or from the Caribbean. And we all used to go there and have food with our wives. And that, I think, create a bond in the team. And that's why for me, again, I go back to, for me, high performance is really having people with different skill sets, but working together and try to don't let each other down. To win something.
But when you're in the middle of a game of football and it's an intense game, there's a lot happening and you're fighting for the win, what does being brothers do for you in that moment?
You fight for your brother. You're not fighting for your teammate. You're fighting for your brother. If he does mistake, you have to cover. You know, and when you have a bond of players who feel like that, it's incredible. The power is immense. And I think that was the strength of that team. We were fighting for each other.
If you were to look back on you now, what were the characteristics beyond that obvious commitment? What was it that you think they saw that, as well as being a good footballer, they saw you as a good person? What were those characteristics?
I'm generous. Generous, you know, because I like to support people. And sometimes I try to do too much. You know, and that's the way I am.
How do you mean?
I mean, I remember we played with Martin Keown, and because Martin at one point was quite old player, and for me, playing with him at the back, because he was such a nice man with me, you know, I wanted to just, you know, run around him, you know, like covering him all the time, you know, because he was constantly talking to me, you know, and you know, I wanted to protect him because even though I was young, but I knew that he was lacking a little bit of speed and my strength was my speed. I could help him a lot in that matter. And he was able to communicate a lot with me. And I think that created that relationship, really.
And what I think is really interesting is when you came for your trial, the fact that you took the pressure off for yourself meant that you delivered.
Yeah.
But then in the invincible season, you played almost every game. Mm. So suddenly there was pressure on you because you were a young player in a great team, edging towards winning the league.
Yeah.
So how did you, at such a young age, deliver under pressure? What were the mental games that you were playing and what were you saying to yourself?
I think when I came and I watched the team, even at that age, I was analysing the team and I was seeing that team of Arsenal, what was lacking at the back. You know, because back in the days in the game, it was tall players. You know, especially centre-back, they were quite tall. Martin Keown, Tony Adams, Sol Campbell. And I was thinking, what can I bring, you know, to that team? And I was thinking, can bring my speed. I can bring my technique as well because I was quite good with the ball. And I always remember Patrick Vieira telling me, Kolo, get on the ball. You know, when Yen Siman had the ball, he would ask me, Kolo, get on the ball. You know, because he knew that every time I was getting on the ball, I was able to break line of pass, pass the ball to him, or pass the ball to the side, or play the ball in this space for Thierry Henry, for his speed. And I think Patrick allowed me really to express myself because he knew what I was able to do and I knew what I was able to bring to the team too.
Can we talk about, as you edged towards winning the league as an invincible, what was it like with, I don't know, 5 games to go and you hadn't lost all season? What were the players saying?
I think, honestly, when we started the season, we were not thinking about being invincible or anything like that. And we just realized that we could do that when we won the league at White Hart Lane.
Right.
And
so how many games left was there after that?
I think it was 6-7 games, I think so. I can't remember exactly.
And you thought at that point, we've done this?
Yeah, exactly. We've done it. What next then? You know, and then we really start to realize, okay, we can do it, you know, but it wasn't something that we've been talking about.
Right.
You know, for me, I was young. Maybe Arsene Wenger had the conversation with Patrick, with the most senior players, but not with me. For me, I was thinking, let's try, you know, try to win game after game, you know. And I can say that in the final game against Leicester, I don't remember, I think that's where we stressed a little bit. You know, I think that the game was a bit strange. We didn't start well, but obviously we won it, and then we won the trophy, and then we've been invincible for that season. It was an incredible season.
And Arsene Wenger is on record as talking about that you need at least 7 leaders in a high-performing team, people that just set the standards. Can you give us examples of what the leaders in that team did to enforce and sustain the high standards?
Patrick was, I would say, the leader. But Patrick is a guy that... He doesn't shout all the time. He will just shout at the right time. He leads a lot by example as well. He does things and you have to follow. I think Thierry Henry was a proper leader too. You know, he's leading from the front, but Thierry Henry is, I would say, like, at this time, he wanted to be perfect. With Thierry Henry, everything have to be perfect. You have to do everything to be perfect. And we had Martin Keown, who was not playing, but he was a guy that before game, we'll push the team. Come on, guys, let's do it. And I think it was not only the 11 players, it was the squad. You couldn't see like players on the bench hungry. Everybody was being the team. And that was massive. Ray Paolo, lovely man again, working hard at training. One thing I will say, like with this team, which I felt like was the key, it was training. The intensity of training was incredible. Honestly, I did trainings there and I was tired after. I was thinking, wow, such a tough training. And you go to the game on Saturday, the game is much easier because you've been training with a high standard. And when you transfer that to the game, You work on your other team, definitely.
And let's talk about Arsene Wenger at this point then. You know, you tackled him on day one, got the contract from him, great. But at this point, you really get an understanding of why Arsene Wenger is one of the greatest coaches the game has ever seen. And we see the tactics and we see the media afterwards, but you see so much more. So why do you think Arsene Wenger managed to do what he did at Arsenal?
I think Arsene Wenger... Nowadays, we can see the modern managers, they talk a lot tactically. You know, they, you know, give a lot of information to the players. You know, a winger coming inside to create some overload on the middle with 4 players versus 3. Arsene Wenger will not talk about that, but we pick the players which were able to do that job. You know, because if you see our team, we had Freddy Ljungberg on the right side. We had Robert Pires on the left side. And what Freddy's job was running in the space all the time, if you remember. He scored many goals like that. Robert Pires, because he was almost like a number 10, you used to drift from the middle to create the overload there. And I think that's what Arsene Wenger was doing, you know, bringing players together with different qualities to get the high performance, really. You know, he knew how to pick his players and put them on the pitch without talking a lot. What he used to say a lot to us, because we used to batter team, you know, in the first half, and sometimes when he's nearly, say, stay calm, stay patient, keep putting the pressure, the goal will come. And that was his word. And we always used to score goals, you know, in the second half, definitely.
So would he focus, so how much of his focus on a game would be on the opposition and how much of it would just be focusing on what you could do?
He focusing in us. He used to focus a lot in us. You know, we do a little bit about the opposition team, but most of his meetings was on us, what we were capable of doing.
And I always think, you know, one thing is getting to the player's head, which is the tactics. What did Arsene Wenger used to do to get to the player's hearts?
He's such a nice man, honestly. You know, I never saw Arsene just being aggressive with a player or shout anything. I never saw that. You know, the way he was leading was quiet, and he would always talk to the players on his office, you know, and he was such a strange man, you know. You see him every morning coming, say hi to everyone, you know, and then you don't see him again. You know, he was leaving the players almost like dictate the area. But I will say, like, he had really experienced players. You know, when you have Dennis Bergkamp, you have Martin Keown, Rui Paulo, Patrick Vieira. These are, they were mints.
Because I thought he would have been there all the time. Do this, do that, don't do it. No?
No. Such a quiet man, honestly. Such a quiet man.
And can you recount any occasion where he did call you in his office, and what was his feedback and the impact of that for you?
I don't remember talking a lot to him. I was, because my culture, you don't talk a lot to your father. Yeah. You know, your father speak to you. He call you. You don't go to him most of the time. And I was not a player which was going to the office and try to talk. Arsene will approach me because he knew I was young and he knew my culture. You know, he knew that in Africa, you know, you have to be really respectful of the elders. You know, this is really, really important. And for me, I grew up there and I had that. You know, it doesn't matter, you know, I came here, but still I have it, you know, and he knew that. And he was always calling me, talking to me, most of the time on the pitch, you know, after training, pull me, speak to me. And that's the moment where I was talking a lot to him.
What was he like when you were late coming out for the second half of your Champions League game? I mean, I think you should probably explain the story for people first before we talk about Arsene's reaction.
You know, what I used to do, honestly, you know, for me, I'm a Muslim, you know, and before that, I go on the pitch, I have to do my wudu, you know, is like taking my ablution, you know, as a Muslim, you before you pray, you have to watch yourself in a certain way. And I always used to do that. And for me, that was important to do that for my mindset to go on the pitch and deliver, you know, and it doesn't matter what happened, I had to do it. And I think that day, that's what happened. I went to do my wudu, and then I came late, you know. And again, Arsene Wenger, really quiet man, you know. He will never shout on you anything like that. I knew he was angry with me, and I was trying to not do it again.
So if he doesn't shout,
yeah,
how does he show his displeasure?
I would say he just, you can see his face change a little bit. You know, but he would never, like, really shout, I would say. You know, when you look at him, he will be like, you know, you do a little sign on his face and you know you got things wrong.
And for a man who achieved so much, what was it like watching by then from the outside as he came towards the end of his time at Arsenal and it got quite toxic and quite negative? How did you feel about that?
I felt bad, you know, to be honest, because I think he doesn't deserve that.
Yeah.
But I would say, like, Arsene Wenger was used to really experienced players around him. You know, he didn't have to talk too much, but when you start having a lot of young players in your team, you need to get on them. You know, you need to be able to tell them everything. You know, you need to be on the toe all the time.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happened. You know, at one point with Arsenal, you know, all the experienced players were, all of them were gone. You know, we were all gone, really. And Arsene had some young players in front of him. And I think for me, in any team, you need some experience. You need some leaders there. Players who've been in the club for maybe 10, 15 years. You know, and the young players, they just copy them. They follow them. They look what they do. And I think Arsene Wenger suffered on that, in my opinion.
Do you ever speak to him now?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah. My father. Give me my first opportunity here, you know, for in our continent, you know, it doesn't matter what happened, but never forget what people done to you, you know. And for me, I call him my father, really. He's the one who gave me the opportunity to express myself in the biggest league in the world.
That's so lovely.
And, so if there was a trait from him that you would take into your own managerial career, what would that be?
Trust young players. Give ownership to the players. Because when I was young again, when I came, he really trusted me. He was not scared to throw young players in the team. And that's why he ended up with a lot of young players at one point, you know. And I would say he's such a calm guy, but at the same time, he's a proper leader who... He's somebody that you want to work hard for him, you know, because the way he treats you very nicely.
So let's talk about the next club you went to in English football after Arsenal. I mean, I suppose, first of all, did you want to leave Arsenal?
Good question. No, I didn't want to leave Arsenal, but at one point you became to be it started to be a little bit toxic, you know, because other players coming and they're coming with different mindsets, you know, and especially when you play at the back and you don't get on very well with people, it's quite difficult. Because, like I said, Arsenal is about togetherness.
And when did that start to change?
Other players coming around, which they had different mindset, really. And I couldn't cope with that, you know, because for me, football is about being together, working hard together, protecting together.
So what does toxic behaviours look like in a football club?
Selfishness, you know. For me, if you want to be able to win trophies, you have to work for each other. Mm. You know, if you have one or two players on the pitch who pick moment of working hard for the team, you know, you won't get anything.
And were you not able to go to the manager and say, solve the problem?
I think... there's a moment in the club where, as a player, you feel powerful and everybody knows that you're in the position of leading. And there is a moment where you start to be a little weak, you know, and that when that happens, you can figure that out very quickly. And the trust starts to go to somebody else, you know, and as soon as you get to somebody else, there's no drama. You have to realize that you remove yourself. And that's what I did. For the benefit of the club, you know?
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you went to Manchester City?
Yeah.
Talk us through the day that you walked into that dressing room for the first time, because every club has a different culture.
Yeah.
What did you walk into?
Watched a different area, differently. Yes. Back in the days, it was... Man City was a club with... who had big ambitions with the new chairman who came. They wanted to achieve great things and they start bringing players. But when I went there, I saw a group of players, very nice guy. It was Vincent, it was Nigel De Jong. They were really nice people, I would say, nice guy. But you could see that they were not used to winning mentality, you know. And from first training, I remember, we did a rondo, you know, rondo and 8v2. And when we do the rondo, when you do the rondo with Arsenal, it's quite serious. You know, you don't want to lose the ball. And then in Man City, we do the rondo, and then there's a moment where I think there's a... when you put the ball in on the feet of a player.
Nutmeg,
exactly. And then everybody starts shouting and kicking the ball away and then laughing. I was like, very strange, not used to that, you know. When you do nutmeg, you just keep going, you know. You laugh a little bit, but it was like very loud and very, I was like, okay, we have to make sure we change the mindset, you know, because if you want to be winning mentality, we need to, when you make a nutmeg, the game is not finished. You have to score the goal, you know, you know, that was the difference, and I knew that we need to change that as a team.
So how did you go about changing the mindset at Manchester City?
Being serious. Don't laugh. You know, when they used to do that, I was like, you know, guys, come on, we have to carry on doing it, you know, because playing a nutmeg is nice, but it doesn't win you games, doesn't make you score goals, you know. And when you, you know, one of the senior player coming, they see that he's not laughing, you know, that means he's not having it. Yeah. You know, and slowly, so start changing the mentality.
And it was Mark Hughes that recruited you.
Yeah.
Did he give you permission to go and change the culture?
Never give me the permission. I was going to take it, definitely. You know, because I was a captain when I came there. And for me, it was no way that I was coming from Arsenal and then just come in the club and just let things happen.
See, again, I was thinking of the parallels with Phil Neville, again, repeating the interview with him. He spoke about when he went to Everton, David Moyes appointed him as captain. Yeah. And he said he actually found it very difficult because he hadn't proven himself to that dressing room. And yet you were given that status from the start. Mm-hmm. Was there challenges in having to establish yourself as the leader?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There were challenges. Donny was there. I think he was the captain as well there. And I think I had to take the captaincy at one point. And it was difficult for a guy like him. He was in the club for a long time. Richard Dunn was the captain. Great guy, you know, a great leader. But I came and then they had to make decision. You know, you have to make decision if you want to move forward, you know. And when I had the captaincy, it was great, but it was really heavy. You know, like you say, you know, you find people there, you know, and difficult to get to bring them close to you. But I think the one thing I had was dedication, hard work. Which I work hard at training. You know, for me, I give everything at training. And when people around see that you're serious, you're working hard, you care about the club, you care about them, they start following you, they start trust you.
So did you go and speak to Richard and sort of have a conversation about what had happened?
No. Because, you know, it happened to me at one point as well. You know, they give the armband to Tevez.
Yeah.
You know, and and that's the way it goes. You know, sometimes you feel like, oh, you know, why are you taking that to me? But this is the game, you know, is about what the leader believe. You know, when the leader believe that this guy is the guy who can lead the team, he's doing it.
And when the armband was removed from you and given to Carlos Tevez, yeah, what did you do? Did you protest? Did you complain? Did you speak to the manager? Like,
well, I was very angry.
Were you?
Yeah, absolutely. I was very angry, and it's never pleasing. It's never pleasing.
What did you say?
My reaction was I was not happy at all, but I couldn't do much as well, but I was very, very unhappy. But again, you get on very quickly because there's game coming, you know, and you have to move quickly to the next one, definitely.
And when you first arrived at City and you were the captain, because this is useful for people who are not in football, but they're in business or they're teachers, parents, whatever, those players who you sensed weren't having you as the captain, how did you deal with them?
I think you have to convince him by the way you carry yourself, by making sure that you train well, you deliver on the pitch. You know, and then they have no choice. They have to follow you.
And were you the kind of captain that wanted one-to-one conversations with players?
No. I was more leading by example, not talking too much, you know, but more like working at the training. For me, training is the base of everything. You know, if you're the leader and you're not working hard at training, players see that, you know, and the level of the team drops straight away.
So James Milner told us that he always saw himself and Jordan Henderson as good cop, bad cop. So he saw himself as being the guy that imposed standards. If you were late, he'd be issuing fines. And then Jordan would be the guy that would put their arm around the shoulder and encourage you not to be late next time. What were you as a captain?
Good question. Obviously, for me, I was more I could do both. I could do both because I can have tough conversation as well, you know, because I'm quite demanding, you know, when I used to be to play, because I was quite vocal as well, you know, speak a lot to the players, but I will give them that as well, you know. But I think everything you do, you have to do it in the respective way. You know, when you communicate with somebody, come on, man, come on, you know, push, do more, you know. But at the same time, when he does something well, well done. Yeah. Keep going. Perfect. You know, when you give them those two different feelings, they feel appreciated, because you never give only the bad one.
Yeah.
You give the good one as well.
And was there a moment then as captain when you felt you did start to get the dressing room coming behind you and standards started to improve?
Absolutely, absolutely. Because we had new players coming, you know, we had Yaya, Silva, you know, those players were used to the top level, you know, as well. And when they came, they make things much more easy, you know, because the standard that they had, they just carry that, they bring that in the club, you know. And the guys that that I find there, they start to raise the level, you know. And if you look, at one point, Vincent became the captain, you know. Lescott became one of the best players, and both of them playing in front of me, you know, because that's what competition bring. You bring the standard, and the other one, you feel like, oh, the standard is no. They start to raise the standard, nice. And then boom, they pass you. And at one point, I was not starting the games, you know. But this is the competition, and when you get to any environment, that's what you need to do. You need to push people to go above what they expect and what they think they can do.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
And you spoke about the brotherhood that you had at Arsenal. You literally did have your brother joining you at Manchester City. What was that like for you as a leader?
Oh, it was special. It was special. It was, for me, it was the best moment of my career, I would say. You know, having Yaya with me, you know, and I always talk about that, but, you know, he never mentioned that, but he could have gone to the other side of the city. You know, and I tell him, listen, yeah, come to us.
Could he have joined United?
I mean, you know, because it was speculation, yeah. Few club, Chelsea, United, and he was thinking, oh, yeah, maybe United can be good because of the standard, they've been winning. I said, come with us, you know, if you can with Man City. You know, there's so many things to achieve here, because if you go to United, they achieve so many things there. You know, we never be a legend, but if you come to City and we do well, you'll be a legend here. And that's what happened. And that's what make me even prouder, you know.
I'm so sorry, man. Colo stopped his brother joining your football club.
I'm smiling, but I'm crying inside, Eric.
Look, you were a true professional. You led by example. You were a captain. Mm-hmm. So would you tell us with real honesty how mm-hmm.
painful it was when you were banned for 6 months for substance abuse.
It was hard. It was really, really hard.
What was the toughest moment?
Not playing games. Not playing games. I was able to train. And as well, you know, when you know that you haven't done, of course, you know, you know, for them is people talk about drugs, you know, but I'm thinking, you know, it's better to use another word, you know, because my kids now think that that took a drug.
Yeah.
You know, and when drug in, you know, in French or I don't know, is like cocaine or things like that, you know, but I was, I took a diuretic, you know, in, diuretic is just to flush the water, really.
Yeah.
You know, and, but, you know, the way it's been, so, you know, it's been in, you know, in the media, I was, oh my God. You
was
know?
That almost the most, because let's just be clear for people that don't know the story.
Yeah.
It was a tablet put into water to flush your system. And the prosecutor said, at no time did you take any performance enhancing substance. However, what you did take meant you failed the drugs test, right? So was it almost the embarrassment of people thinking that you were taking a performance enhancing drug that was the hard? Or any drug?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, because you think that I don't need that at all. You know, and for me, it was to prove that I didn't need to take something like that, you know. And that's why when I came back, you know, I was very hungry to show more, you know. And but it's difficult. It's very difficult time. And but again, that's part of the game. You know, you have setbacks. And when you have setbacks, you have to fight and wake up and then carry on going, you know. You know,
we can't talk about your time at City without talking about Aguero and 2012.
Absolutely.
What are your memories of that day?
I would say that day I was not in the team. Again, it's difficult. Very, very difficult when you are not in the team, of course, because you're a competitor. You want to be on the pitch. You know, after being banned, you know, I think I fight my way to come back. It was really, really hard. The players established themselves. They were playing very, very well. But again, I will say it was all about the project. You know, coming to City was a challenge for every player who came in the club. And when Aguero scored that goal, you know, deep inside, you feel like, you know, I'm part of it. I'm part of a big moment. Big story in Manchester City life, and we will always be remembered. And I think that's that was my feeling. You know, I said, "Okay, Kulo, you left Arsenal. Everybody was talking. Yeah, he left for the money, for the blah blah. But when we won it, it was like almost, you know, I made the right decision to move because I helped that team to win a trophy.
And for a team like Manchester City that hadn't won the league in such a long time, what do you feel mentally you brought to them that enabled them to get over the line for that first time?
I think it was the belief, because to win a trophy, you need to believe. That's the first thing. Because at the start of the season, is everybody in the same line. When you have players who won it before, you know, they will carry you there. They will take you there. And that's what happened, really. We just bring belief to the fans, belief to the clubs.
So then eventually your time at Manchester City comes to an end. You didn't want to leave Arsenal. Did you want to leave Man City at this point?
You know, I was feeling a bit disappointed a little bit because I felt like the trust that the club have put on me, I don't think I've given back, really, because of all the things happened to me. And I wanted to, you know, have another opportunity because Pellegrini came and I felt like, okay, if Pellegrini come, maybe I will have more opportunities, I will have more chance to play. But unfortunately, they didn't want to carry. And then, you know what happened next.
So did you have a choice of clubs when you left City?
I was scared. I was scared, honestly. I was thinking, where are you going? I was thinking maybe go to France. And then I had a phone call from the big man, from the Norwegians. I was delighted, honestly, when I...
So take us back to that moment. Where were you?
I was home. I was home and then see my phone And then Brandon Rogers on the phone. You know, I was like, oh my God.
What did he say?
He said to me, listen, Kolo, you know, I'm thinking about having you in my team, everything with your experience. And I said to him, boss, okay, no problem. One thing I will tell you, I will never let you down. You know, that's what I tell him, you know, because I told him that straight away.
And how quickly does a conversation go from you and him chatting on the phone
yeah.
to you pulling on a Liverpool top for a photo for the first time? How quick was that?
Yeah, it's not that quick because you have to go through medical, you know, in that tough moment as well because you never know what can happen there. I remember I went to Melwood at that moment and...
So did you go straight to Melwood after the phone call?
No, it take a little bit of time.
Right.
And then... you know, took time and then I went. And that it was a day where there's no one in the training ground and I was on my own watching there, you know, looking. It was different training ground from where I used to be, you know, because it was like, you have houses around and then the training ground is inside. And it was really, it was a good moment, you know. I see like the photo and I start to realize that I was going to sign for one of the biggest club in England again. Really fortunate for me.
I'm really taken by that line that you used to Brendan, though, around, I won't let you down. Why was that such an important promise to make?
Yeah, because I was in the moment where people was doubting on me. And I was doubting on me too, you know, because as a man, you, when you are set back, you start doubting on yourself, which is normal. If you don't doubt yourself in those moments, that means you, I don't think you, you know, you are human, really, I would say. When he said that to me, it was the way for me to reassure him. But at the same time, it was a way for me to say, like, come on, Kolo, this guy will put his trust on you and you have to make sure you don't disappoint him. Again, you go back to what I say, you know, when people trust me, I feel responsible to make things happen. And that's my nature.
So you won the league at Arsenal.
Yeah.
Won the league at Manchester City.
Yeah.
Two incredible clubs.
Yeah.
But there are very few things in football like running out at Anfield in front of the Kop wearing the red of Liverpool. Take us to the day that you did that.
That was incredible. Honestly, what a club. Yeah, what a club. Unbelievable. Playing in front of the Kop is... Wow. First game, I will say, first game playing against Stoke. And had pressure on me because I could see like the environment, you know, the fans were not sure. Kolo Touré,
how could you tell they were not sure?
You see the press, people talking, you know, and even you see fans and you don't see them really enthusiastic to see you, really. They're thinking, oh, maybe his time is gone. Maybe he won't do well for the club. And for me, that game was important, you know, to show from the first minute. And I remember there's a moment, and Brandon talk always about that. And I can remember that moment was incredible. In the game, long ball, I think from the goalkeeper. And then I'm in duels with Peter Crouch. You know, Peter Crouch really tall. I'm thinking like, listen, you will win that ball 100% to make sure that to give to all the fans the sign that you are here. I went high and I won the ball. And I could hear the fans, like, you know, I could see like they were shocked. Because you know Peter is really tall and to win the ball on his head is quite difficult. Honestly, I was amazed by my jumping. You know, I was like, wow, how did you do that? But again, that was the emotion that I was carrying. The willingness to show to the fans that I'm the man, you know. And I think that action changed the view of all the Liverpool fans.
So how much of the success of your career then, when you talk about imposing your will, making it happen for you, how much of what you did in your career was up here and how much was physical?
I think everything was there. Everything was there. You know, it doesn't matter where you come from, how tall you are, how fit you are. I think when you have the willingness to get something, you find resources.
In your head, mentally.
Mentally, exactly.
What was your greatest moment in a Liverpool shirt, do you think?
Wow. I would say, like, we haven't won, you know, the trophy, but the final of the Europa League, It was incredible. Incredible. We lost the game. We lost the game, but I was really, really proud because for me to be able to play that final was a challenge because I was in competition with really good players. And at that age, and we lost, but we give everything.
And did you see that Liverpool squad and that manager and think, in the future, something great is going to happen here?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You could see that.
What could you see?
He's a lovely man. He's a lovely man. He's a leader. He's somebody that you want to fight. You want to work for him. You don't want to let him down.
Klopp.
Yeah. You don't want to let him down. He's... When you join, when he came into the club and you shake his hand, he doesn't shake your hand like everyone, like managers, shake you like a mate. You know, and I think that's, it create that trust straight away. And you feel part of his family straight away. And I think what he's doing now, and I have no surprise, you know, he's a lovely, lovely man.
What did he say to bring the players on the journey with him early on? Do you remember the first time you saw Jurgen Klopp address the players and think, I like what I see here?
Again, I would say about the way he shake your hand.
Just that first impression.
First impression. He shake your hand like a teammate, you know, and he's... I would say the things that I think was the key for all the success for Liverpool. I think Milne spoke about that a little bit. That was the moment where we lost that final. You know, the Europa League final, That moment. You know, we are all down. You know, we lost the game. Everybody was like, you know, in the party. And then we were, you know, why are we doing? Why are we doing there in the party? We lost the game. You know, we saw the manager walking up there in the middle and dancing. And then walking around, pulling everybody, come dance. You know, I was like, why is this guy crazy? What is he doing? You know, but he ended up to be one of the best parties I've been to, honestly. You know, he made us forget about that moment. And I think his strength is a guy that he never carry negative things. You know, he let things go. You know, you could see he lost a game yesterday. You know, in his comments, he said, like, they perform well. You know, he will never get angry to the players when they give everything. And I think that is strength there.
So you've been in title-winning dressing rooms. You've played for some of the iconic managers of our time. How important is a manager? If you had to allocate a percentage to it.
Wow. I will really say like 70%.
Wow.
Yeah, 70%. Because your manager is the one who brings the cohesion. The manager is the one who brings the strategy. And the manager is there to motivate the players. And when you do all those, three things, you're inspiring them. You know, and I think manager is very, you know, people sometimes talk about, top players. Yes, top. You need to have a good squad, absolutely. But it's how you get the best from the players. You know, and I think people think as well, people talk about Pep Guardiola and people see him as a top manager and people say he has good players. Yes, he has good players. But what he does best, he get the best from those players. Each Man City player play with their full potential. Every single game, you know, and that's not for one game, it's every game. It's pushing them to the extreme, you know, and I think that's what I believe that if you have a manager who's quite, who doesn't inspire you enough, you know, you'll never reach your full potential. Because football players like to be relaxed, like to be tranquilo. Like everybody, you don't want to work too hard and achieve things. You know, and but when you have a manager who push you hard, and you know, you can end up achieve things that you don't think even you could be able to do.
Then there was a lovely moment where you were able to end your career by joining another huge club. I mean, you've basically played for every famous club in the UK, nearly. You went to Celtic and you were an invincible once more. How special was that at a time in your career when you would have been well aware that there weren't many games left?
Yes, absolutely. There were no many games, definitely. Joining Celtic was for me, I was going there because of Brendan Rodgers. You know, I was following Celtic a little bit, but not overly, I have to be honest. And when I joined there, I was like, I'm not sure what I was going to see there. And I went to the training ground. I see the people. I see the fans. And I was, it was incredible. The passion, it was incredible. They love the club. They love the club. Yeah. And the competition between Rangers and Celtic is there's no many like that. Because it's religious, I would say.
Yeah.
They don't like each other. They hate each other.
So how do you deal with a rivalry like that as a footballer? What's the best way to get the best out of yourself in that really red-hot atmosphere?
Win games.
Yeah.
Win football matches.
Especially in Scotland.
Especially in Scotland. Make sure you win the title.
Yeah.
Make sure you win every single game you play against them. And I will say that when I joined the team, it was his first time when Rangers came up from relegation.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think we battered them 5-1. You know, it was a good game. I played that game, by the way. It was intense. It was a really good game. We played very well. And at the end of the game, I was driving my car and I see like the police on the middle of the road, and I saw two set of fans. You know, it was what some fans on the left and on the right, and it was, you know, Rangers and Celtic fans wanted to fight each other. And I was driving there. I was like, "Oh, come on, turn quickly!" And then drove to go to the other way. And it was incredible moment in Scotland.
And at this stage of your career, Colo, how did you keep your motivation levels high?
It's difficult when you when you feel like you're losing your strength. And because I was a powerful player and I was somebody winning my duels all the time when I used to play, I was suffering inside me because I was suffering in trainings, intensity. I couldn't cope with intensity anymore. I was get passed by young players. Yeah. I was hating that, you know, and I was thinking, you got to make sure, boom.
Do you remember the moment that you decided to retire?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's a game, I remember there's a game. I think we were doing like Invincible. We had a break, I think, in December, and then we came back. And I remember having the conversation with Brandon, and he would say, "Colo, do you think you'll be able to play that game?" And we had a young player, Didi Boyota. He'd done very well at training that week before we start the second part of the season. I was thinking, "Colo, you have to make sure you don't play that game, and you know you make the team lose, you know, because I don't think I was in my full potential because we
but
did
you
the
thought
training.
If you'd have played, the team would have
exactly.
lost.
Exactly.
And did you say that to Brendan?
I never said that to him. And he asked me, and I was like, I said to him, "Listen, boss, play that player." I said, "Play that young player." And I think as a human, you have to know your limitation.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to know. You know, sometimes our ego try to push you, and then, you know, because we want to be the one who have everything. But there's a moment you have to realize. And I realized that moment, I was thinking, let this boy play. He's doing very well at training. He's fit. Just give him this chance. And again, you go back to Martin Keown.
I was going
to
say, yeah.
You know, Martin Keown supported me when I came. He never stopped me developing myself. And I was thinking, no, I don't want to stop this young boy development. And I had conversation with that boy, Dedrick. He was down. He was thinking, oh, I'm not playing, blah, blah. I said, stay calm. You know, stay calm. And I said to him, I was so honest with him, you know. I said, listen, I'm playing because I have the manager. No, I have more experience. He respect me a lot because of my experience. But stay calm, you're going to play.
How lovely, though, that after all these years, you were able to give back as Martin Keogh.
Exactly, you know.
Gave back to you.
And that was my feeling, yeah. You know. And I was thinking, okay, done, you know, for me.
Yeah.
No energy anymore, you know. Just leave the boys, and have his career.
The day comes where you pull on a football jersey and put on a pair of boots for the final time as a player.
Yeah.
What were your emotions that day?
You know, you... Again, I have no regret at all because I felt like I emptied myself,
yeah.
You know, mentally and physically. You know, I give everything. Because for me, again, I told you, one thing is training. And when I felt like, you know, at training, I was not giving my best. I was letting down my teammate in a small side game, you know. You know, I was like, no, done. Done. And, you know, I'm very proud of the career that I'm done because I feel like I give everything and I always try to be honest with myself in my teammate.
And we're talking to Kolo Touré, the manager now, rather than Kolo Touré, the player. You've had your first managerial job at Wigan.
Yeah.
It lasted a few weeks, a few games.
Yeah.
How painful was that experience and how much did you learn?
My pain was letting people down, you know, because I had the trust from the chairman, from the fans, from the people at Wigan, from the CEO. And unfortunately, the strategy that I've used have not worked.
What was the strategy?
My strategy was I had this style of play in my head and tried to implement that. But, you know, I learned that it's not about you really. It's about the players. It's about what they are capable of or doing. You know, and I was really fortunate to play with clubs who wanted to win every matches, teams who want to win the trophy. And I never been in that environment of fighting for relegation.
Mm.
And when I went there, I wanted to impose things that I've been learning in a winning mentality environment. It was difficult for the boys, you know. And again, I have to be honest with myself the positive thing is I learned so much from that moment. I learned so much because I know now if I go to another opportunity, it's all about you. It's about people you're going to find there, what they are capable of doing. And I think that's the biggest learning for me there.
So it hasn't dulled your desire to be a manager? It hasn't put you off the job?
Like when I did my try in Anderlecht, in Strasbourg, in Bâle, you know, for me, it gave me more strength. You know, I can't wait to go for another opportunity because I know that I have a lot to give to the game. You know, I don't want to be sit home or and don't give what I learned and don't give my inspiration, don't give my energy. You know, when I watch football matches, you know, I try to analyze everything. You know, I watch African Nation, you know, I watch almost every single game. I had my notebook, you know, on the TV and try to note if I was the manager of Nigeria, for example, or of Ivory Coast, where I was going to tell my players, you know. And for me, football is not a job, it's a passion.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, when I used to play, I told you I used to talk a lot, you know, and that's the way I am. I like to inspire a team to win. And even any player will tell you, even in a small side game, you know, as soon as the game starts, boom, I'm on it. You know, I want to win it. you know, and because I had that all my life for 20 years. I just want to carry having that, you know, and that's the feeling I have now.
So for a CEO, a football club owner, a director of football, if they're listening to this conversation, why should they pick up the phone to Kolo Touré next time they have an opportunity for a manager?
Because I'm honest. And I will defend the club. I will inspire the players. I will make them work hard and to win football matches. And I will give everything, you know, for the club to be successful, you know, because you can always only give your best, you know, and that's what I'm going to do, you know, work hard for that football club.
I'd give you the job. But sadly, I don't have one to offer.
Unfortunately.
I mean, if I did, I would. We've reached the point where we're going to do some really fast, quick-fire questions with you now.
Okay.
So what are the three non-negotiable behaviours that are really important to you?
For me, respect. I would say respect is very important, especially in the team environment. Mm. You know, you can respect between each other, between the players, respect between players and staff, respect in the canteen, everywhere. You know, when people are respectful, they really, you create a good environment and people looking forward to go to that environment.
Yeah.
Number two, I will say discipline. You know, because as a manager, if you just put a strategy, you want every player to really buy into it and play their role. You know, and I think it's very, very important to have discipline. Nowadays in the game, you know, you cannot have players who just do whatever they want, you know. And that's why for me, discipline is very important.
And the third one?
Commitment. You know, I will say commitment because, you know, for me, as a player, when you sign for a club, you have to make sure you work hard for that club. And it doesn't matter if you are, you know, you picked or you're not picked. You know, for the matches, you have to give your best, you know, and because you are part of a group and there's a moment where you're going to step up and somebody will sit down and that person needs to support you and create that, you know, that brotherhood is so important.
Brilliant. What advice would you give to a teenage Kolo just starting out?
I would say control your emotion, I would say. Because I'm quite an emotional guy, you know, and you learn that, you know, you learn that with experience, you know. You have to make sure you just, if you're not happy, you stay calm, think before you can speak, very important. And that's what I'm going to say to me, definitely.
What's your biggest strength, Kolo? And what's your greatest weakness?
My biggest strength, I will say, I'm positive and I don't know where that comes from. You know, I always see a positive thing out of nothing, you know. It doesn't matter which problem we are in, I will feel positive. I have the energy to go and push, you know. I don't know where that comes from.
And your greatest weakness?
Can be too nice sometimes, in my opinion, a little bit. I think people will say it's not a weakness, but I think you have to know how to manage it.
Yeah.
And the final question is, what's your one golden rule to live a high-performance life?
Give your best every single day. Have no regret in everything you do.
Wonderful. What a great conversation. And I would love one day to see you as the Ivory Coast manager lifting the Africa Cup of Nations with the players all around you, hey?
World Cup.
Ah, I love it. The World Cup. Perfect. World Cup and Africa Cup of Nations.
Boof.
You know what?
Inshallah.
If good things happen to good people, then that will come your way because you absolutely deserve it. And I know what you mean by sometimes you can be too nice, but it's far better to get to the end of your life and people say he was too nice than people say he was too nasty. So thanks a lot. No, really appreciate it.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Damien.
Jake.
sometimes someone sits in the chair and we have a conversation with them for an hour and you wish you could spend the next couple of months with them. They bring an energy, a lightness, just an atmosphere, not just to us, but to the whole team that makes you feel good. And Kolo absolutely fits that category.
Yeah, you know, somebody that brings high positive energy is a real attribute. You can see why he's going to be a really successful coach. It reminded me of when Eddie Jones said, nothing you do is neutral. Mm. Every action you do has the intention of either enhancing or eroding the positivity around the place. And he's somebody that just enhanced it incredibly.
And the conversation at the end there about his challenges as a manager, I said to him, just as he stood up, I said, thanks for being so honest about why things went badly at Wigan. And he said, one of the challenges for me, he said, is people expect great football because of my history of playing under Arsene Wenger, of playing at Liverpool, of playing for these great clubs. And I think he's learning now the power of patience. And I think the next time he gets a job, from what he was saying, is he will just have to change his approach. And I think even that is powerful, that he's had all these years in the game, won all these titles, won all these matches, and is still learning. And none of us are ever the finished article.
Yeah, I think there's something powerful about dealing with the world as it is, not how you wish it to be. And I think he's a man that's come in and sort of imposed his will on situations and made it how he wishes it to be. But if you're going to do that through the guise of engaging other people, you have to deal with where they are, not where you are, and be patient. And I think that last line for him of commitment all the way through from when he's joined Arsenal in that trial, right the way through to when he felt he couldn't give his commitment at Celtic, yeah. This is a man that's going to be successful taking those characteristics.
Commitment is exactly the word. And you know, culture is another one. And I will say that when he left the room where we're recording this, Benny, who operates the cameras in here, he said goodbye. Kolo was halfway up the stairs, came all the way back down again to shake his hand and say, sorry, I didn't say thanks and goodbye. And I think people can sometimes sit in this chair and you know when you interview someone and you think, you're saying all the right things, but I'm not sure I actually believe some of them. With him, I wholeheartedly believe that the Kolo we've just met is the Kolo who will walk into a dressing room and manage a team again soon, hopefully.
Yeah, I hope so. And you know what? He's the first guy as well that's ever given a definition. You know, when we hear lots of people say, oh, you've got to believe. And then you go, right, okay, I get that. That's a mental process. Yeah. But what does it look like when it translates into a behaviour? And when he just said, you're on it from the off, your commitment, your intensity is self-driven. You're not waiting for circumstances to generate it. I think there's an intelligent man there that's, if he's able to translate that intelligence into other people's heads and their commitment, I think he's going to have a very exciting career.
I hope so. Thanks, mate.
Pleasure. Thank you.
And that brings us to the end of this conversation with Kolo Touré. I don't know about you, but one of my favourite moments was, of course, that line about Arsene Wenger being his father. What a lovely thing to say. And I think that whole episode is a great reminder that the impact that you have on people lasts an awful long time. And I tell you, from Kolo Touré shaking the hands of every single member of the high performance team, posing for photos, he arrived early, hung around, chatted to people, a constant smile on his face. He's funny, he's friendly, he's engaging. And all of us, Kolo, wish you the very best with whatever comes next. And as for you, thanks for listening. Thanks for continuing to share and grow high performance. And don't forget to remain humble, curious, empathetic, and find your own version of high performance. Have a good one.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt, So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.